Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, and Jim and I are both downplaying our capabilities of covering tonight's debate, since the candidates have done such a fabulous job of lowering their own expectations. Jim, it's been months since we've covered a debate, so I'm sure we'll be a little rusty, and I'm sure other people will cover it much better than we do. So we'll talk about that a little bit later in the market.
Greg, as you know, you and I only learned to speak a short time ago. we're still putting sentences together. I still punctuate every sentence with an So that last one is true. So maybe I... Maybe some of this downplaying and downgrading of expectations is hitting a little too close to the mark this bit. Let's just move on to the martinis, baby.
All right. Well, today's good martini is courtesy of a guy who's often in the third martini, and that's Vice President Joe Biden. He was in North Carolina, and this time he didn't just say he was in North Carolina. He actually was in North Carolina. Here he was talking about, first of all, a very flawed policy position, believing that the Romney campaign, if elected, would raise taxes on the middle class. But nonetheless, here's Joe Biden trying to get really passionate and personal with his audience. And that's usually the point when he goes a little off script and says something like this.
This is deadly earnest, man. This is deadly earnest. How they can justify raising taxes in the middle class that's been buried the last 4 years. How in Lord's name can they justify raising their taxes with these tax cuts?
Well, they don't have to justify it because they're not asking to raise taxes. They've never said they're going to raise taxes. In fact, they're going to cut taxes. But Jim, the fact that Joe Biden just admitted that the middle class has been buried the last 4 years, I think it took Paul Ryan about 30 seconds to insert that into his stump speech wherever he was yesterday.
That statement in just 15, 30 seconds or so is really a cornucopia of Biden craziness. Because for starters, what is deadly earnest compared to earnest, Greg? Is it earnest that is very sharp edges or something, or explode? It's earnestness that is explosive and can blow up under the right circumstances. So once again, the Biden tradition of just like using literally every couple of minutes and in circumstances in which it's completely inappropriate. Our economy was literally on the precipice. What do you know? No, you mean figuratively it was on the precipice. There was no giant cliff that we were about to topple over. So then he says, how dare they raise people's taxes with these tax cuts? You thought I voted for it before I voted against it sounds silly. You know, this is like, you know, how dare you make the sun shine by making it rain, Greg? How dare you sit by standing up? But then the third thing is, you know, and the, you know, boy, you know, every once in a while, the Romney campaign must be finally where we're getting the luck we deserve on this campaign. They have the claim that the middle class has been buried for the past 4 years. And, you know, probably a lot of folks heard Paul Ryan saying, yes, we agree. If that's the case, stop digging. Get some new folks in there. Stop these same policies that we've been in place for the last 4 years. I do like the line that was, Guy Benson forwarded that I guess burying the middle class was the shovel-ready job they were talking about. We can scoff at this, but as I mentioned in the morning, Jim Pethakakis pointed out, look, middle class income is down significantly over the last 4 years. So this is not just poor word choice or Biden being Biden. This is, look, no, the middle class really has suffered over the last 4 years. We are not better off than we were 4 years ago. And so agreed, Mr. Vice President, you're totally correct on this. Totally by accident, but you are totally correct by this. And so later on he was, but they've been buried by the policies of Romney. And wait a minute, Romney and Ryan haven't been in office, you know. The tone of a lot of both the Obama campaign messaging and some of the mainstream media's campaign coverage, and I realize I repeat myself when I say that, has been, why hasn't President Romney done something about the destructive policies coming out of Washington? And, you know, can't this challenger Obama do something? You know, I mean, Obama's been there. It's just baffling. So we can be thankful. And it only makes us feel even, yes, tonight's debate is a big deal, but we're even more looking forward to that vice presidential debate. I would easily trade three presidential debates and like nine vice presidential debates every 2 nights between now and the election, just to hammer home what a uncontrollable doofus Vice President Biden can be most days.
Well, on to martini number two, which is not a bad martini, since tonight is the debate. We're going to spend just a minute or two here talking about what we hope to see from this debate. And, Jim, we've just touched on what I hope to see most of all from Mitt Romney tonight, a clear, decisive, and in some cases almost angry denunciation of this repeated Obama-Biden lie that he's planning to raise middle-class taxes by at least $2,000 per family. It's just complete fiction. It comes from a think tank headed by a guy who used to work for Obama. For some reason, he couldn't get the math to work in balancing the budget, so he just assumes the solution is going to be raising taxes on the middle class. Romney has never said it, so he needs to make that extremely clear tonight and point out that the president's number one ad focus has been a complete lie.
The other thing is the idea that President Obama is going to go attack anybody else on the deficit and debt. I mean, really. Yeah. I guess we're approaching $6 trillion. We're now above $16 trillion in national debt, more than $1 trillion of new debt added each year Obama's been in office. I guess a quick question of what do we expect from Romney tonight? One of the things that's worth noting is I think President Obama is his team has been trying to lower expectations, as we've joked about. But I think he really is not as good as his greatest orator since Cicero reputation would suggest. It was in Washington Post today, they talked about what were Obama's most memorable debate moments. And they really couldn't come up with any. That he really wasn't didn't have that many great lines or great zingers. And the one thing everybody remembered was, well, you know, you're likable enough, Hillary. A moment that I think a lot of people said came across as condescending and snide and you know. You know, probably this is right before the New Hampshire primary. And it didn't help him with New Hampshire Democrats at all. So Obama clearly is in victory formation. He's going to take a knee on every one of these questions. And he probably thinks that all he has to do is be, you know, no drama Obama and cool, calm and collected. And you know, he can cruise to reelection. And I think that what Romney can do, I really want to see him underline the sense of national crisis and kind of, you know, point out that there's this atmosphere of complacency around the White House. Four Americans get killed in Libya and we're still the investigation still ongoing. We don't have the FBI there. We don't have anything, you know, going on. We find out that there's all kinds of suggestions that there's the intelligence from day one was saying this is a terror attack. For about 8 days, the administration saying, oh, it looks like a spontaneous response to this YouTube thing. Terrible violence on the border. Fast and furious is this egregious scandal. And Obama says, well, we got the IG report. I'm confident in the work of Eric Holder. There's this culture of complacency, this culture of things going not that badly. The private sector is doing fine, as the president famously said. And I really think Romney can emphasize the point of no, we're not fine. We're in dire straits right here. We are really not in. You know, we were in a crisis in 2008. Now here we are 4 years later. Just because there's not an atmosphere of crisis doesn't mean we're not in a crisis. You know, we are still in very bad shape. We are weakening. We are threatened, and our finances are out of control. And if Romney can really create that sense of, look, if we don't change course, the results for this country, as bad as they've been so far, are really going to be catastrophic, then I think he can really break through and get these remaining folks who are thinking Obama's doing an okay enough job or maybe not voting and undecided and all that kind of stuff, really kind of light a fire under them and remind them of the consequences of this election.
On to martini number three now. And just like number two wasn't all that bad, number three is not crazy, although some might say that it is. This is an excerpt from the Daily Caller video, which got a lot of play all last night on the Sean Hannity program on the Fox News Channel. It's a tape from then-Senator Obama, I believe in the summer of 2007, a speech in Chicago where he extols Reverend Wright, has a different cadence, you might say, than he normally does in his formal speeches. And here's a little bit of an excerpt of one clip that they showed where he's referring to what he says the unfair application of the Stafford Act, which requires local communities to chip in 10% of the recovery budget. He says it wasn't used in the wake of 9/11 because that was too big of a tragedy. And then he compared hurricanes between Hurricane Andrew in 1992 and Hurricane Katrina in 2005.
When Hurricane Andrew struck in Florida, people said, look at this devastation. We don't expect you to come up with your own money. Here's the money to rebuild. We're not going to wait for you to scratch it together because you're part of the American family. What's happening down in New Orleans? Where's your dollar? Where's your Stafford Act money? Makes no sense. tells me the bullet hasn't been taken out. Tells me that somehow the people down in New Orleans, they don't care about as much.
So there's a couple things that come out of this in terms of a debate, Jim. One is that the president has a tendency to divide along racial lines. Well, we didn't need a 2007 speech to know that. And my initial reaction to all of this is, wow, this could really help John McCain if that wasn't 4 years ago.
Yeah, you know, this really could hurt Obama in Louisiana. Oh, wait, he's, you know, he's, you know, trailing Louisiana consistently. Well, here's the thing. I mean, for the purposes of history, it is worth looking at, you know, every aspect of Obama's, you know, record and speeches and anything that's kind of been, you know, not brought to light. I'm completely in support of efforts like Breitbart's vetting project and everybody who wants to do things like that. But I don't want us to have any illusions about what impact this is going to have on the 2012 race. And, you know, there's a certain argument to be made that, you know, they may have lost a news cycle by focusing on this. I don't think that's that big a deal. What I do think, though, is that this is, if you've been paying attention, this is what we've gotten from Obama. This is, you know, voter ID is trying to bring back the Jim Crow laws. This is the Cambridge police acted stupidly. This is if Obama had a son, he would look like Trayvon. Allegedly, he held a private White House dinner that he believed racism was a driving force in the Tea Party. Eric Holder, within a few months on the job, tells Americans, you know, that we're a nation of cowards when it comes to discussing race. Time and again, Obama and his allies basically, you know, take the most deep suspicions of the black communities, would say paranoia, that the white establishment is out to get them and out to hurt them, and pours gasoline onto that fire and says, yes, there's, you know, and they reinforce those suspicions. They reinforce that distrust. The idea that Obama would play to that and kind of demonize the white culture, so to speak, of the rest of the country, that's really nothing new. That's kind of, you know, and I think the ones in office are much more troubling than anything he did back in 2007. I like the observation from Frank Jay. Is that the accent Obama picked up from the mean streets of Honolulu? And then asking whether, you know, was this, did he, what did his typical white grandmother think of it, thinking back to the Jeremiah Wright speech? So, I mean, the idea that Obama's willing to get into some demagoguery in this area is not really that surprising. I don't begrudge Tucker Carlson or Matt Drudge or Hannity or any of these folks deciding to play it and, you know, discuss it. But I don't think we should have any illusions about the impact this is going to have. This is, you know, for people who think Obama is willing to race bait in order to help himself politically, this will just be one more piece of evidence. For others who don't think this is an issue, I don't think this tape is going to make them think it's an issue. And so it's kind of a wash on that point. My guess is in 24 hours, we'll move on to other things and the discussion will be the debate instead of, you know, some video from 2007.
That would be my suspicion as well. And I'd be surprised if it even got brought up at the debate tonight. But Jim, I'm sure we'll both be excited for the debate tonight. And hopefully we'll have three good martinis tomorrow, although we'll not raise expectations too high because we know that's not the way that's supposed to be done.
Absolutely, Greg. Looking forward to tomorrow then.
Sounds good. Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us on Thursday for the next Three Martini Lunch.